guys, and welcome back to another episode of Comic Book Legion Podcast. I am super tired. I don't know what I was going to say, but I hesitated there. And of course, I am here with my co-host, Mark. What's up, man? I am so tired.
I can see that.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's up, man? Let's go. We're talking DC.
I know, dude.
The bottom of the pile. No, I'm joking. I actually like this week.
I really enjoyed this week. I was surprised as to like how many books there were in the folder when we got these books.
Yeah, yeah. This was one of those really large weeks. But for me, there were a lot of titles there that I haven't even gotten to yet. But there, I mean, the ones. I think every title that I read this week I liked.
Oh,
and,
for sure.
And we got a new Hill House comic, which for me, I'm absolutely loving that imprint. So for me, that was one of my first reads.
Yeah, I read the title, and I was like, that doesn't sound like a DC hero. Let's move on. But
yeah, no, I saw Plunge, and then. At first, I was like, oh, is this a Vertigo book? And then I'm like, oh, Vertigo. And then after I had that brief little, you know, piece of sadness knowing that, you know, Vertigo is like no more, essentially.
Womp, womp,
then I was
womp.
Like, oh, no, this is Hill House. And then, you know, seeing Joe Hill and Stuart Immonen, like seeing the creative team on top of that also got me.
Yeah, I saw
pretty pumped.
I saw a preview. What got me interested in reading it was I saw a preview page or panel for Plunge number 4, and I was like, oh, so that's what this is. So
yeah, Plunge has, I mean, Gary Frank, I mean, Brad Anderson, they've been doing a really good job. I mean, might as well just jump into this book because we've been kind of just teasing it out of nowhere.
Yeah, for real.
And then we can do pleasantries after if we want. But yeah, this was one of those books that I kept on looking at how gorgeous these like the B covers are.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, man, this story is like one of those that I'm really, really interested. I mean, you know, you got Joe Hill, Stuart Immonen, Dave Stewart. I mean, it's a pretty big like creative team and something that I really enjoyed. And I immediately, when I dove in, I was like, okay, I liked it. I mean, I like books that kind of don't have much dialogue at the beginning. I kind of like letting the art tell me what the tone and kind of like what a story is. Like, let me immerse myself in the story by looking at it.
Yeah.
Before kind of do the exact opposite of what Far Sector is doing, which is throwing, you know, maybe about 6,000 characters per page. And I'm like, man, this is so much. Like, I don't even know what's going on. I kind of liked how this book treats it with it being a little small, and it's really mysterious. You know, you got this mysterious ship. It's been 40 years that has been gone. It's been MIA and out of nowhere. Now it is sending distress signals. And as I mentioned to you, like outside of recording, now this company, this organization wants their ship back. Now, of course, I'm sure there are mysteries in there on why are they so desperate to go back and get, you know, something that, you know, essentially everything being 40 years underwater is probably going to be pretty much destroyed. But you know there's probably something in there that they really want. So it's like they're gathering, and that's kind of like what this book is like they're gathering their band of misfits that are willing to do something off the books.
Yeah.
So they have one girl, I mean, you're looking at the cover, the variant, you're like, oh man, like what's up with this shark, and like who's this, who's the girl swimming? Lo and behold, I mean, she works like in a aquarium, and she's like the one that feeds the animals. So it's kind of like you see her immediately with that shark, and I'm like, oh, okay, like cool. Like it's like they did a good job of kind of teasing it, but you know, there's more things that are going on that you know, that you're kind of interested. I mean, there's a like a group of like sailors, and there's a lot of dildo jokes, but it's, I mean, it's good. Like I like it. It's cause it's sharp. Like the writing is sharp.
Uh-huh.
So it's not like one of those that you're like, okay, oh God, no, it's like, it's witty. It's like, it's good, sharp writing. And then there's, I don't know how everybody feels about it, because sometimes people just want horror for horror, and then there's horror, but that has like a supernatural element, and there is a sort of supernatural element at the end that we know of so far, that it is kind of actually it's very Batman-esque with what's going on with Catwoman right now with all the villains.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's something similar to that, where I'm like, okay, all right, and I'm down for it. I mean, right now the only book I'm kind of down on is Daphne Byrne, and it's not even that bad. It's just it's really slow, and it's in the time period that I don't really care for, so that's why I'm having a little bit trouble with that. But I'm loving everything from this imprint, and this book right here, this is a winner in my eyes. So I would highly nice. Recommend if you're, you know, maybe, I mean, there's a gazillion amazing indie books right now, but if there is, you know, if there's a book that you're looking into jumping into, this is a pretty rad one to start.
Nice.
On that end.
Now,
did you really not know it was me on your Twitch?
I really didn't know. How am I supposed to get Mark from Superfan 45?
Soups fan, you know? Man. It's like super, you know, Superman fan, Soups fan. 45 is my baseball number. So I figured I had to...
Okay. Okay. Yeah, speaking of Twitch, that's something that I really wanted to let you guys know. We have been talking, and this idea came out, like, gosh, last year when I had this computer built. But we're finally able to do it. We're going to start streaming our podcast. We're really wanting to build a community on Twitch. And I know you guys listen, because we're not just yelling into a void. So I would really appreciate it. And we would really appreciate it if you guys
or
come join
us. Or they
download
us just to pity us. Maybe they download to pity us, but they don't listen to the show.
Man, that would suck. That would suck. But it's going to be on Wednesday, February 26th. Of course, the time would be, I guess my time would be 10 a.m. Central Standard Time. And if you don't know what time that is in your time zone, easily just like Google it. Just you don't even have to put converter, blah, blah, blah. You just put 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, and Google automatically understands that you're trying to find out what your own time zone is for that time, and it'll tell you. I do that all the time whenever I'm trying to figure out when DC is making announcements on the East Coast or West Coast and like all sorts of stuff. Just really quick, just like look it up. 10 a.m.
You don't know that you're 1 hour away from Eastern time.
I do. But
oh, I'm like, you need a Google for that? Jeez.
No, but just like some days, I'm just like, what is that? And I just look at it real quick. But Wednesday, February 26th. 10 a.m. Central Standard Time. Me and Mark will be talking about that week's books, and then maybe afterward. I know that Mark usually has to leave right after that, but I'll stick around. We'll talk about the books. I'll take questions, things like that. I don't know if we're going to take questions immediately in the podcast, because we try to keep it a little bit lengthy, but you get to see the process of which we do this, and yeah, I think it'll be fun. So
I don't think I want people to know our process, because we're pretty bad at this.
Yeah, I mean, they can see us grow.
Hey, Clay. Ben Affleck is no longer Batman. You need to throw away that shirt. Leave it alone. Okay?
This shirt
I'm seeing your
me.
Shirt now. No.
This shirt was given to me before all that.
You can't. You got to get rid of it.
I use it as a
you,
work shirt.
Because you were a fan. You
I use it.
Him.
You need to stop it.
It was your fault.
Stop it.
Because of all the CW love.
Stop it. I will say that new movie that is coming out with him being
the way back, yeah.
The alcoholic that is like trying to get his life back together.
Yeah, the way back.
That's gonna be like one of his greatest films, I think. So
it looks. I mean, I love the director. I mean, Gavin O'Connor. I mean, this is like the creative team of The Accountant.
Yeah.
So it's that, I mean, if you've ever seen the movie Warrior, I mean, that's a good one too.
Yeah.
That's actually one of my, that's probably one of my, like, my favorite, like, fighting film.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. That movie's, like, really good. I know, like, other people are gonna like my age in the 30s and like 40s. I know maybe like Fred will say like Rocky or throw some Jean-Claude Van Damme movie like, you know, Bloodsport or something.
I immediately thought of Jim. He loves Bloodsport. Yeah.
Maybe, like, you know, so, or maybe that's why I'm thinking of the movie. But, yeah, it says, you know, something old like that. But, yeah, Warrior for me is probably my favorite. Like,
awesome. But let's go ahead and move on to Aquaman 57, written by Kelly Sue DeConnick. Artist is Robson Rocha and Daniel Henriquez, I guess, did the cover. In this issue, Mirror and Aquaman welcome their very own Aqua Baby. In the wake of Black Manta's attack on Amnesty Bay, Aquaman encounters a new crisis when Mirror unexpectedly goes into labor, and things don't look good for the Queen of Atlantis. Don't miss this historic emotional issue that kicks off a bold new era of Aquaman. So, this... I know that the synopsis made it sound really, like, eventful and crazy. Not much happened in this book, to be completely honest. They go down to Atlantis, because they're still in Amnesty Bay in the very beginning of this issue. They go to Amnesty Bay in, like, a hospitalized area. And, you know, it was interesting to see how Atlantis, like, hospitals work. And we do get a small cameo from Dolphin. I don't know why, because... She doesn't.
I was worried about that because I didn't know if like seeing Dolphin there was going to be something where like, oh, now she's in a coma and now, you know, Dolphin. I'm like, oh God, is Dolphin going to be there for Arthur and help her with like the baby or something? And because I don't know, it kind of felt like they were trying to do during.
Oh, is she going to be like, a sister Sejek's... wife to Mira now? You think that's
I hope not. I hope the thing is not that petty. I'm just saying that you saw that during like the Sejek when he was doing Aquaman during that whole time. If you were reading it, then you know, it looked like they were trying to create this relationship between Arthur. And...
Yeah, like a love triangle between all three of them. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
I think back then, what was he calling himself, Orin or something like that? Yeah, I think it was Orin. Like he wasn't even calling himself Arthur. So it was. Yeah, I mean, this issue was fine. I mean, I'm not going to say it was as eventful as the amazing issue that, like, Tom King and Mitch Gerards did for Mr. Miracle, which was, I believe it was issue 7, which is by far my favorite issue that those two have ever done, because I thought that was a pretty great way to show, like, all how crazy it can be. From not being able to find parking to, oh my gosh. But it's cool because it's that you're adding the superhero element where you have like New God and they're like threatening here, like, here's this weapon that I'm going to use to kill you. Like, there's like the superhero element, but it felt real. This one was very, I don't know, I guess because it's Atlantis is more like fantastical, but I'm with you. I never felt a sense of urgency. For me, it was more, ugh, why is Dolphin there? And secondly, I was like, oh God, what's Orm going to do? Like, seriously? Like,
why did he show up?
But I thought it was going to be because of they were going to go crazy. And you're going to have, like, in the triage center in the hospital, you're going to have, like, even though there were some blows, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't as major as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. You know, it's very weird because I feel like a lot of these were just like, oh, because it's an eventful issue, we need to throw in as many characters that, you know, the reader recognizes just because. And because that's literally what happened. You know, Orm, as dramatic as the entrance was, nothing came out of it. And of course, you can say, oh, it's because of the doctor that came in and yelled at him and all that stuff. But still, the only thing, literally the only thing that happened in this book was the fact that Aquaman got to hold his daughter. Really.
Well, I mean, I think now we know a little bit more where we know that Mera is going to be off the plane. You know, she's going to be off for a while.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think we're going to be seeing, which I know that. Fans, because everyone needs Aquamera to be together because it's all about shipping. But I think that for Arthur, I think that this is a big deal, and I think it's good because of all his fears.
Yeah.
For him to kind of have this focus be on him where he can, like, you know, kind of go through those fears and realize that, you know, he can do this, so that when Mara does come to, she's, you know, Arthur is there and will be, you know, an amazing dad. On top of that.
Yeah.
Another, I guess a new little element is now that Ocean Master with Orm, that he is now from the city of Dagon. And it seems to be that no one knows where that is, because you saw from the sister, like Mother Critia, she's like, the city of what? And Volko's like, yeah. Where? So I don't think that they know where that's from. And if they don't know, then I'm going to expect that I shouldn't know what it is. And it looks like he's got some interesting people on his side.
Yeah, some interesting muscle. So
yeah, so I'm curious what that can be. So I don't know if that was subtle. Like, just throw Orm in there, just so that he can kind of show this. But I mean, we'll see. But you know, I'm okay with it. I mean, I like it. I think that the baby has way too much hair for a newborn. But you know,
hey, according to my mother, I had that much hair when I was born. So
she probably cursed you too.
But yeah, let's go like on.
What are we doing?
I know, dude. I know. Let's go ahead and move on to Batman 89, written by James Tynion IV, artist Gilliam March, and of course the cover artist has been Tony S. Daniels. Batman must stop Deathstroke from killing the mayor of Gotham City, but to do so, he has to figure out who ordered the hit in the first place. If his four main suspects aren't fessing up to the crime, then is there someone even more sinister lurking in the shadows waiting to deliver the coup de grace? Whoever it is, one victim will fall under their attack. Now, I may be mistaken, but I did not know that there was a hit on the mayor for this entire issue.
Yeah, I mean, the hit for the mayor, isn't that what they were trying to, like, kind of doing, which, with what they were trying to do to, I guess, like, I'm forgetting how to speak English right now. Isn't that what they were doing to try to distract Batman?
Okay, yeah. You're right.
Yeah, like, the goal was to try to distract them. From actually getting to, like, what the main thing is. So I could see it. Dude, I'm still, I don't know, man, seeing that there were, like, multiple artists. See, like, when you looked at the very, very end of the book and you see, I'm just going to say, because I think everybody knows, but when you see Joker, that looks like Gilliam March when it comes to, like, art. But then when you see right above, when you see our new character Punchline, that looks completely different, where I'm kind of curious if that's that Carlo Pagulayan.
I don't know, man, because I feel like Gillian March has a very weird art style, and he, like, flips. Like, I think it's more of, like, the direction that he's being told, like, hey, you need to make Batman look good, but everybody else can just look like whatever.
Yeah, so that's the thing, because when I see that, when I saw that art, I'm like, okay, that's his art. And that's why I was really confused. So, I don't know. I'm still all over the place. Okay, it's not Tony Daniel, but I'm still... But yeah, this issue was... I mean, yes, we're seeing a little bit where we saw what happened at the end with how last issue ended with Penguin, where it looks like Penguin was dropped off by Batman due to his wound, and now he is, of course, it's always a great idea when you're threatening that you're gonna, I'll give you $100,000 if you save me, or else I'm gonna kill your entire family.
That's a pretty good motivator.
No pressure to you know, make sure that things are done right.
But at the same time, like, Penguin doesn't have any goons with him. So if he dies, he can't kill anybody, you know?
So yeah, I don't... on top of that, I mean, you get some really, really, really cool action sequences between Batman and Gunsmith.
Mr. Teeth.
And Mr. Teeth. I mean, it was really nice, but that's really just kind of letting you know what's going on with Batman. And even though he knows that, in a sense, he's falling into a trap, I mean, he's still kind of taking care of business. In between, we're brought back to how the issue last ended, where we were back with Harley Quinn. And Harley Quinn and Selina are just, I don't know, it really bothers me when people chat so much. Like, I don't know how you can have random conversations while doing these kind of acrobatic flips. But then again, I don't know how boy bands can sing and dance at the same time and sound good. So maybe superheroes just have a gift. But, you know, they're here, and we get to see where that one corpse that was actually in the casket, and we're like, whoa, is this Joker? Well, no, it looks like it's just one of the goons that ended up having to be the one that was sacrificed. So that wasn't like a really big reveal.
But I also think that it's somewhat of an homage to the movie Joker, because the guy's name is Artie, like Arthur.
Okay, it could be.
So I thought that was kind of cool, if it is.
If that is the case, then you got to tweet Tinian and see if that was the case. But we were introduced to, because again, Batman thinks that he knows where Riddler will be, who would be behind this. But he was not where he was supposed to be, and that's where we were introduced to. Crap! What's this dude's name? I know it starts with a D.
The designer.
The designer.
And yes, the only reason why you know that his name starts with a D is because he has a giant D on his face.
Yes. And I don't know. I mean, I think he looks stupid.
Yeah, that was one of the notes that I wrote down, because I was actually writing notes for this issue. The designer has, like, no fashion sense whatsoever. He's wearing camo pants with a, like, military, like, garb, like, chest with a tie. Then he has, like,
yeah, it's like a, but fur. it's like a military garb that, like, Ra's al Ghul would wear if he cared about medals.
Yeah.
Then he has, like, a parka, but his camel pants are extremely baggy. And then he has, like, shoes that Jafar would wear in Aladdin. I don't get it. I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't understand this guy, like, at all.
But apparently he knows where Riddler is, and I don't know. I mean, what I did like is the little bit that we did see between Bruce and Selina. I really liked how, you know, you could tell that she cares and that she's completely, if you've ever had senses like, man, I wonder, like, when is she going to turn, or is she, or something like that. I mean, although you did just mention to me a tweet that Tom King posted about an hour ago, which is Bruce and Selina, well, Batman and Catwoman on a gargoyle, and she's pregnant. That's a tease.
Yeah, Juice, you know, my co-host for Batman News Weekly, I sent him the link, and then he just replied to me just now. He said, "Fat cat."
So I mean, that's interesting. So
that is interesting. Canon... But I will say, one of the big things here that I've seen on Twitter, I've seen on some Reddit posts, and on Instagram, is that people are worried that Tinian is being told to break them up, and so he's trying to cause tension. I hope that's not the case here, and that everything is still okay. Because I feel like Batman, through everything she has been through, through everything that Catwoman has done, killed people, like, freaking stolen diamond, like, you know, she has been a villain for majority of her career and for their life. And he has said, you know, screw all that, I love you and I still want to marry you. But now, for some reason, because there is a new villain, he's just like, nah, this is the straw that breaks the camel's back. Like, I think that would be kind of dumb.
I don't think that's the case. I just think that, you know, when there's couples, I mean, you can't have everything be, I mean, there's crap that goes on between Clark and Lois and Clark.
Yeah.
It's just, the way they have their little arguments and drama is kind of like what you're seeing in Lois Lane. Clark is going there and he's kind of like not trusting Lois, that Lois can, you know, do it on her own. She doesn't always need to be protected.
True.
Like those are their little tiffs. Like that's how they do it. And here, I mean, it's Gotham. You know, it's nasty. It's muggy. You know, it's just dirty. So that's just kind of how. And Selina is not, you know, she hasn't always been a Girl Scout, and she's still not. So I mean, she's got some murky stuff in her past, and you know, sometimes. And I mean, it's not even sometimes. It's just the way the world, you know, life is. You know, the past will come back to haunt you, and in this case, it has. And you know, but you see her; she looks contrite. I mean, she even goes where you could see the hurt, and you know, she's like, "I'm sorry."
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know. I liked it. It showed growth. I'm not in the believer that Tinian is there to break them up, because I feel like that's just. I feel like DC's done just sabotaging what Bat and Cat is. Like, why have that? Like, you got to be completely, like, stupid in, like, the Batman editor to have, like, two books completely just going, you know, going against each other.
Yeah, for sure.
But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, DC's making some funky choices, so they maybe they would think it's a great idea that they're breaking up in one story while they're getting knocked up in the other.
Yeah.
Who knows? But then again, this is a big issue. If you are a collector, not only because, yeah, whatever, Batman 89, but this is your first introduction. You see very little, but if you are someone who is...
If you're a collector,
like those people
you
that
see,
are like headhunters
yeah.
of first appearances and stuff,
you
this
get,
would be your
you get
first
a first appearance,
appearance
of designer, and you get the... It's not first appearance, it's the first cameo of Punchline. Because right after that conversation with Catwoman and Batman, we see, and you saw the cameo before at the graveyard. You saw somebody
yeah,
watching Catwoman and Harley, and she says something like, "Oh, she doesn't look that tough," or whatever, making a comment about Harley. And then you see only from like the mouth down or the nose down, whatever, call somebody, and that person being Joker. And they are planning, you know, the basic destruction, just like always, of Batman. And you see behind Joker the mapped out, like, Bat family. So it looks like he is going to go after the family again. This is, I'm afraid that this is going to be either Death of the Family or Endgame 2.0. Because it's Tinian, and he's the understudy of Snyder. So I just feel like it's just going to be that story all over again.
Yeah. What scares me more in that sense is that at least when you saw Endgame and Death of the Family, I mean, it felt scary.
Yeah.
I mean, Death of the Family felt scary.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah,
that
yeah,
was
yeah.
a book, like, my gosh. And I don't know if it's the ripped up Joker, but every part of that, and I think maybe that was still... You know, that was kind of like prime Scott Snyder.
Oh, yeah.
Before he started to go a little more on the everything needs to be bombastic and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But when he was grounded and just in great storytelling and horror kind of stuff, that was, for me, Tinian is just, eh. He's good, but it's hit. I don't think even, I mean, I loved his Detective War Comics run in Rebirth.
Yeah.
But even to me, that was none of it's like, whoa. It was really good.
You know, one thing that really bothered me that Tinian has been doing with Batman is this whole gadget thing. I feel like it's become a gimmick. And I just like, it was unneeded for this issue, you know? But they wasted like two or three pages. Like, building up what the device is and then showing it, like, following Deathstroke. And...
Yeah, the little bat drones?
Yeah, I understand that, like, okay, yeah, Batman uses gadgets. It's cool to have, you know, so many gadgets or whatever. But, I mean, at this point, I want the mystery to be done. Like, I want to know the story. I don't want to know the gadgets. I want to know the story.
Well, I mean... I'll at least appreciate that. I think didn't you mention it, right? That Tinian at least said that he intended to like introduce a new gadget every episode, every issue.
Yeah.
I mean, at least he said it, where I can at least, you know, it's an expectation instead of it just being kind of thrown in there. I mean, it doesn't matter to me showing it, because I've always wondered, like, what else does he do besides always seeing the same things? And these are one of those things, like, you know, there's so many times that you have those conversations, like, who can win in a fight? James Bond or Jason Bourne or James Bond or Batman? I mean, in this case, I mean, the more you see Batman having these gadgets, I mean, I feel like you have more of a chance that, you know, although Bond has, like, MI6, you can kind of say, like, man, look, he's got some gadgets. He's got some gadgets, too. So maybe Tinian has just had all these, he's had these kind of arguments before in the past, like, with, you know, fellow nerd buddies. So his entire story is just to show that Batman has more up his sleeve than what Bond fan thinks.
Yeah. But I
doubt that's what it is. But
let's go ahead. I want to talk really quickly just about Justice League 41. Now, I know that we had a lot of concerns for this book in particular just because of the way Robert Venditti had pulled that Justice League 40. And it was kind of confusing, you know? It was very hard to...
We recorded on the wrong day.
Yeah, we did.
Let's just say that.
We recorded on the wrong day because all the information about it came out afterward. But I will say, reading Justice League 41 was actually fun. It was a good read. It was fun. It, like, genuinely, I know a lot of people, and even Snyder has said, that his inspiration for the team and, you know, writing the Justice League book was the Justice League animated series. This issue felt like a Justice League animated series episode. And in a good way. Not in like a, oh, it was very cartoony and kind of cheesy. Like, this felt like an actual, like, watching something Justice League related. So, of course, the Daxamites come in. They are fighting the League. Batman is out trying to recruit Madame Xanadu. And, you know, we get some quirky stuff with Flash and... what I was going to say, we get to see Diana use the lasso against the commander of the Daxamites, and she's like, how do we defeat you? And one of them is like, oh, well, you know, we can't be defeated because, you know, we're strong in numbers and blah, blah, blah. Now, I will say the gist of this is that Batman does, you know, he is able to recruit Madame Xanadu after some convincing. And she basically goes back with the Justice League just to evacuate them. And because they're getting overrun, it's crazy. But when they get evacuated, Wonder Woman's like, okay, hey, I'll cover us. Y'all go. And the next thing you see is freaking the Eradicator break into the Hall of Justice, use their broadcasting room to broadcast an announcement throughout the entire world saying that he is going to eradicate Earth in an hour and that nobody should try to stop him because there's no use and blah, blah, blah. And when they teleport, when the Justice League teleports on the other side of the Scottish Highlands, is where Madame Xanadu put them, Flash notices somebody's missing. And you see the Eradicator at the very end holding up to the camera in the broadcast. And he says, do not look to the sky for heroes, species of Earth. They are already defeated. And he's holding Wonder Woman. Like, she is out. And so, it's interesting. You know, we still get a little bit of the connective tissue to the other books as far as, like, there's a conversation in the very beginning. I don't know where this is. It's somewhere in Metropolis, but these two random citizens are talking about how Clark Kent is Superman, and, you know, that's when Eradicator and Superman burst into their building. And then we also get, again, Flash having, you know, iffy, you know, Speed Force powers in the middle of this book also. So, it... excuse me. I know my throat is, like, getting dry. But, Yeah, this book is actually really, really fun to read. I can appreciate it a little bit more, understanding where Venditti's coming from and how he is wanting to, you know, basically connect each character into continuity with a big run like Justice League. So I can appreciate it, and it was actually really, really fun to read.
I'm not used to you being so, like, positive all the time.
Well, if you notice, there is a trend in this week's books.
So with that being said, Legion of Superheroes, number four.
And that's when you break the trend. You break. Yeah, no. You broke the trend.
I didn't. I haven't read that one yet. The third issue kind of. You know how I am. I think you know how I am by now. Where I'm kind of like I'll give you 3-4 books, and then it's like a week will be missed, and then I'm like, okay. So I mean, I'll get to it, but I'm not. Legion of Superheroes right now is not really. Honestly, the only reason why I would be willing to read that book. It's not so much because of the Legion, more because I want to know what do they know about Damian Wayne, which is what we were kind of like what you got teased about in the in issue 3.
Yeah.
So let's jump into Killer Smile.
Yeah. Yeah.
Killer Smile. This is like the book that I've been wanting to talk about in this
story.
Oh,
it was so good. I actually read it like super early this morning. So I.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's kind of like, you know, because Lemire can kind of be wordy as well.
Yeah,
but there's something about this story that there is so much being told, but it's moving so quick, and the story is just so tight. And I love the ins and outs between you getting what's really going on and kind of like the. Pretty much the story being told on like a children's novel.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, man, but this story here, I mean, Mr. Miles, you got like a, what is it? Mr. Pout, which is a Pout Man.
Yeah. Batman.
Yeah. Like, I loved it, but this was, I've really been enjoying like what's going on, like the downfall. I don't know why I love these books, but seeing what's been going on with Ben and seeing little by little from the first issue of him being there to do like a case study on Joker to at the end of it realizing, man, something's messing with my head. Issue 2 was like this guy completely like just melted down, and now this is kind of like him at rock bottom where he's, you know, he thinks that the Joker has completely messed up his life, and he's like, no, it's you. And Joker's like, no, you have finally removed the mask, and now you're living as who you truly are. And yeah. There's something about I didn't think I was going to enjoy the Joker the way that he's portrayed, at least in terms of like physicality. But there's something about him looking so real. Mm-hmm. And not so cartoony, that makes him even scarier. And I don't know why. I don't know if it's because of the way Tinian does it. But he's, again, I don't know if this is because I've been watching, like, Mindhunter. But in this beginning panels, like the first 10 pages, remind me so much, no, even more so, of kind of like Charles Manson. That Charles Manson has a way to find these certain people that look like they have their life all together, and these people that he ends up turning, like Manson turned into killers, like it didn't fit their MO. I mean, you had kids that were really good students. I mean, these were like A+, they were like successful kids, but for some reason he was able to hit that little, you know, that little mark. And he's doing it here as well with this doctor, and being able to, I mean, convince him to say, like, no, this is your wife. Your wife showed her true colors by abandoning you and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, wow. And then you see him at the very end just breaking down. And then you have Joker, who in a sense is, like, not doing anything. Like, well, not doing anything in terms of, like, the actual act.
Yeah.
But it's crazy how he can kind of just break someone down because of the charisma, as you could say, and how the way that he can, you know, control a situation. I don't know why, man. I just thought it was terrifying because you see him breaking down and it was like, okay, so then it was you. No, it wasn't. Okay, so what's next? And he's like, chaos. And then that's what ensues.
And then I think like open the Blackgate prison.
And then I think we get one of the coolest pages from the story, which is the guard that's right next to Killer Croc's cell. And that is probably one of the best pages that I've ever seen.
Yeah, it looks so good. I really enjoyed, for as creepy as this book is, and this isn't the end, technically. This isn't the end.
No, we have a one-shot, which is a bummer, because I didn't know it was a one-shot. I thought it was going to be another three-parter.
Yeah, it's going to be a one-shot. But to actually like have Batman show up in this issue, I think was really, really cool. You know, he got to fight Joker, and I think that's like ultimately what Jeff Lemire wanted. He wanted a Joker story, but of course everybody who writes Batman or writes Joker, they each want like them to fight each other. That's just the one thing that they always need to have in some sort of capacity.
Well, I think it's just like if you got into comics one way or another, if you were going to write a Batman story, you kind of always wanted to write one with Joker.
Yeah. But Ben, the doctor, he ends up going to his family's like apartment or house or whatever.
Oof.
And like he's fed up, you know, because of the lies that Joker told him. Like he is like, okay, I'm just going to kill this woman. And he has a gun like pointed at her. And then all of a sudden the kid shows up. And the kid has, like, paint on his face. And I am pretty sure this is all in his head. Like, it's got to be, right?
I mean, I took it as it was all in his head. And Ben realized, because I think that he was still, like, fighting, like, the little bit of good that was still in him. And he kind of saw the monster that he was becoming.
Yeah,
and he saw it in his son. Now, because I didn't see any, I mean, yes, you saw in the beginning of this issue, now my recollection sucks, so I don't remember if at the end of issue 2, if they happened to see that he had some paint mask, if he had his face painted at the end of issue 2, and if that was the case, maybe the son just wants to be like his dad.
I don't think so, because by the end of issue 2... That's when you already notice that they're already gone. So you don't know how long they've been
okay,
gone.
Exactly. Yeah, see, so that's why I didn't remember if they showed him. Because you see here at the beginning of this issue, his face is already painted.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't remember his face. But again, I don't remember things really well. So here, seeing that, I'm taking it as, you know, a father is seeing the monster that he's becoming. And maybe this is like where his son will go to. The thing that gets me is that you're seeing all the blood. So it's kind of like, it makes me wonder, did he actually still do something? Because although his head, you know, when he was painting the gun, I mean, when he hears his dad, where he hears his son say, dad, and he turns, you kind of see the background going red, and then you're seeing the flashbacks and then the falling in the blood. It kind of makes me wonder, like, did he do it? But then I don't think so, because I see the wife say, like, Simon, but I don't really know.
Well, no, because, like, right after that, he is in he's in Blackgate, and he's talking to the other doctor. And, you know, he's saying, thank you, you know, he's, like, super sad about the situation, but, you know, this doctor's saying, hey, you know, we still have hope, and that's good, you know, your family is safe. So, they don't seem to be, like, they didn't get killed or they're not hurt, but he is stuck in here because Joker messed him up so badly. And
yeah,
which
is fine.
They think that he could still be rehabilitated, which is awesome. But, like, even he says, okay, well, Joker, like, really messed me up, but he got away. Like, what is there to do now? And then it goes into the story of Mr. Smiley about how, you know, the sad doctor found his home in the magic castle. Mr. Pout was in the shadows where he's always meant to be. And Smiley was free to enjoy you know, spreading joy and mirth. And you see him, just like in issue one, spreading those balloons with the gas.
Yeah.
And at the very end, it says here, the Joker will return in the one-shot Batman the Smile Killer. So I'm pretty pumped for that. I'm excited for it.
Do you want Batman to kill him?
Because of the way Lemire is writing the story, I don't think I would mind if he did.
Like, I kind of want to see a story where, knowing that this is, you know, Black Label, all this kind of stuff, I kind of want to see one of those where, just do it, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Just finish it off.
Now, one book that I saw you talking about a lot this week, not necessarily spoiling it for people, but I will say it has been spoiled via other solicits that have already come out, and people have already taken the last photo of this book and spread it all over the internet. This is Flash Forward number 6, written by Scott Lobdell, artist Brett Booth, and Evan Shaner, Doc Shaner, as the cover artist. Now, Mark. High-level thoughts. What'd you think of the finale of Flash Forward?
I liked it. I'll preface it by saying that I liked it. I like that there's... I mean, I know it's going to be divisive, and I think that's why I like it. Because I like stories that are not... You know, it's not like, oh, it's this. Like, it's not that simple.
Yeah.
Yes, there are elements in this story... Because from what you saw at the end of issue 5, yes, he realized he's with his kids, but in this world, this is not real. This is his nightmare. This is Wally's nightmare, and in order to get back and be able to save everything, he needs to destroy this world that just so happens to have his kids there. Well, within everything that we saw in the last issue to what you're seeing here, it gets to that point that Wally reluctantly is going to kind of... He understands what he needs to do, but he just wants to have that one moment with his kids. Understandable. But before he takes over and he's going to begin this new journey that he knows, like, his new destiny, he kind of makes, like, a deal with Tempest about in regards to his kids. Now, for me, this moment I adored. It was one of those moments that... Reading Titans and seeing all those moments with Wally and Linda, you're just like, oh my god, please, yes, like, just get that back together, because that's what everybody is yearning for. And I think, I don't know if you ever asked this question, but this was kind of like the question that everybody was asking during the time. You see Wally zapping everybody, like in the Titans, why can't he zap Linda? Right?
Yeah, it was one thing, well, like, because it was from what I can remember, because I will say, when reading Rebirth, like in the very beginning, Titans was my favorite book. 100% the yes. book that I wanted to keep reading. Because
Titans, just, and actually, believe it or not, Green Arrow.
Yeah. Yeah. Those were great. I could go on about the giant list I had in the beginning of Rebirth. But Titans was my favorite book. And because I thought, just like everybody else probably thought as well, Titans is probably going to be the secret book that's going to have all the answers to what the DC Rebirth one-shot was going for. Because, of course, Wally was in it. Now, my thing was that it was via contact that he was able to get everybody back up to speed with him and his memory and all that. Now, it was very odd... Because I'm pretty sure, like, he touched her hand or something, but it didn't affect Linda whatsoever. And, of course, I'm sure, and we've speculated this before, that Doomsday Clock was supposed to give us more answers about all that also. But because of the way DC, you know, redirected, Geoff Johns had to redirect the story to meet their means. So, I was very excited to see this come into fruition as far as the situation you're talking about, that being that the deal that Wally made with Tempest is that he needs to save the kids and take them back. Now, because of the way the Dark Multiverse has been as far as what we know it as, through all the one-shots and metal and all that, I thought this was a Iris and Jai from a Dark Multiverse world.
Yeah.
That is not the case. This is, like, these are his actual kids that were taken from Earth Prime at some point, which was kind of teased at the in last issue, like through his memory. And so, in a weird way, they're saying that the Dark Multiverse has existed since pre-52.
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy to think about, but...
Pre-New 52.
Yeah, pre-New 52.
Yeah.
And so that's how his kids went missing. Now... Just because of the existence of the kids, Linda immediately gets, like, this overwhelming feeling of, like, all of her memories coming back. Everything's back. You know, she's asking for Wally. She's asking where the kids are. And she sees them outside. And she's overjoyed. They're hugging. But the big reveal is that in order to do this, in order to save the world and to basically... You know, protect the Dark Multiverse from consuming the Prime Universe, really. Not just Prime Earth, but Universe. Is Wally had to sit in the Mobius chair. And now he is a god. He is a new god. And he is and he is not Wally. But it is very clear... By the very last panel where it says the adventures continue in Flash 750, he smiles. It is very clear that he is still Wally. Like, I can, like, you could very much tell just by what he is saying that he is ready to embark on this journey, but he probably has some plans of his own. So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of. I kind of go both ways because I don't. Because of the way that you hear his monologue, which is, we are Wally West, no, we were Wally West and something more, we are the most... So to me, I felt it more as, maybe, okay, with that smile, but I don't know, he felt very disconnected. He felt kind of like Manhattan-y.
Yeah.
In the sense where I'm like... So that's why, I mean, to be honest with you, when I just read A New Me, I didn't even notice the smile. So that was a good catch. Because to me, it felt very disconnected. And that's why I felt like this was a story that was going to be very divisive. Because you're going to have the moments where, oh my gosh, Linda, she remembers. Oh, the kids, they're back. Everything's good. And then,
but Wally doesn't get to be with them.
Wally is still, now Wally is in another chapter, which in a sense kind of like takes him even further away than from Wally, like, not even like Linda not even remembering.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in a sense, a big element was Linda remembering. And the kids are back. Like those are two huge things.
But see, my question is, will everybody else remember Linda and the kids? Because if that's the case, will Barry go to Linda and be like, hey... Like, I just started remembering, like, where are the kids? How's everything? Where's Wally? And then the kids let Barry know. And they're like, okay, like, this is the situation, but you guys are under our wing. We take care of family, things like that. I would like to see that. Because one thing that you pointed out this week, or even, I think it was just yesterday, your unpopular opinion, you know, the Flash having the Flash family at the center of its stories, like, I would like that. I would like for Williamson to go out of his way to go see Linda and, like, Williamson write the Flash in a way to, like, make that start to be, like, what it needs to be, you know, having that family centered
story. I mean, I
story.
Think that he can, because, I mean, in the beginning of the runs and stuff, I think he did a really good job when he was handling, although... Wallace was a little annoying at times.
Yeah.
Because Wallace was annoying, but I have to give props because Williamson actually made me care for Wallace. So it was kind of like a double-edged sword there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I get it. I mean, Wally, with this going on, I mean, love it or hate it, I mean, Heroes in Crisis happened, and Wally still, in a sense, has to kind of pay penance for that. And I can kind of see this being just another chapter of that of the penance. But to me, I mean, I look at it more in the bigger picture of, man, I'm just happy that Linda remembers, and I'm happy that the kids are back. So you have, like, two-thirds of the family instead of it being nothing. Like, there was no connective tissue.
Yeah.
So you do have that. And, you know, I'm happy to see that this we're going to see, like, right away where you're going to be seeing Wally jumping onto Flash. So, like, I'm cool with that. Like, great. We're getting some stories that connect. And this is not like a reveal that's going to take a long time for us to kind of see what's going on. No, it's going to it's soon. So I'm happy with that. I was okay with this issue. I liked it.
Yeah, very, very good. I am excited for Flash 750. Now,
and it's been a while for me to say that I'm excited to read a Flash book.
Yes, it has. We haven't read a Flash book in almost a year, I think. But
I think we did like year one just because we felt like it might be.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, kind of like something new from what he was doing.
Yeah. I will say I haven't read the solicit, but I saw the picture for the solicit. There is a certain character coming back.
Yeah, it's like Zoom, right?
Yeah. Zoom. And it looks like they are fighting against Wally.
I don't go bite covers. That could just be like
I know
fighting, and they just happen to.
It could very much be like just like something that they throw on there just to make sales or whatever. But you know, sometimes the covers are relatively equivalent to what the story is, and so I think that would be kind of interesting.
I do got to say though, I wanted to ask you this question because I thought that this was a really cool, a good question by a comic dude DC when he mentioned. Did you believe that the big reveal, because this last panel that you see with Wally in the blue, I mean, it was pretty much, they literally teased the last page just minus the dialogue. And I mean, you could have just done the dialogue anyways because, I mean, it barely said anything.
Yeah.
Do you think that this reveal is going to hurt people like buying this book, or do you think because of the lack of sales that this book has received, they kind of threw this in there because they needed Flash Forward 6 to be a book to talk about?
That's hard to say because, of course, these books aren't made like the 2 weeks before they're released. These books are usually made a month or two in advance. Now, if that's the case, a month or two in advance, they would have had at least three issues out, and they could have seen how the sales are going by that.
I mean, there were talks of the book getting canceled.
Yeah, if that's the case, then I could kind of see it. But also, if that's the case, that kind of sucks on Scott Lobdell's, like, part, in the sense of like, hey Scott, you need to do something even more like charismatic and crazy in order to have this book sell. And like, if this isn't his original ending and this is just something that
I believe it was his original ending. I'm just trying to think that, you know, I don't know, once you tease, oh okay, so Wally's gonna have Manhattan powers, I feel like that might be like, oh, well, then there's no point in me reading. I already know like what's going to happen.
Well, so, I mean, like, this, at least I don't have to read it. This is a big seller for this issue, of course, but I think this is an even bigger seller for Flash 750.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just think that when you're going to reveal the big twist, which is this.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a chance that people might not want to buy the book, which would have made them miss what happened with Linda.
Yeah.
So, I mean, all of that could have happened. And you're like, people are going to jump at the 750. Like, how does she remember?
If anything, I would have teased the Linda embracing the kids instead of Wally being a god.
See, like, if now if you teased Linda going like Wally, Jay, like if they did that,
yeah,
and just see her like showing, looking out the window, crying, I feel like everybody would have been like, "Oh my god, does she remember?" Like that would have been a huge. I mean, this was a huge conversation starter, but I don't know, man. I don't think this should have been the book to, at least the reveal.
Yeah, for sure. So I can see it hurting it in some capacity. But I think the word of mouth of the whole thing with the kids coming back, I think that will also help it. So I think it'll be neutral. I think that the sales will probably be the same, unfortunately. Or they'll at least like even out.
Yeah. Okay.
But we have one more book just because, you know, we talked about the entire series before. And this is the pseudo-sequel. We're talking about Deceased Unkillables number 1. Now, this only has 3 issues instead of 6, like Deceased. And it says, the blockbuster DC series returns to answer this question. What did the villains do when the heroes failed and the world ended? Spinning out of the dramatic events of 2019 smash hit, writer Tom Taylor returns to this dark world with a street-level tale of death, heroism, redemption, led by Red Hood and Deathstroke. DC's hardest villains and anti-heroes fight with no mercy to save the only community left on the dying planet of the undead life. So, what did you think of Deceased Unkillables?
I loved it.
I very much enjoyed it. I like the very beginning where Deathstroke is running into this building and like all of a sudden all these people start to run out and he's like, this usually isn't how it goes. So, yeah. And then he ends up killing like 2 or 3 of them outside and he walks in and he says, a house full of Nazi freaking zombies, the worst of the undead combined with the worst of the living.
Yeah, I mean, like, that was a little bit on the nose, but, I mean, I think the reason what I really loved about the beginning was more, you know, the one thing that we talked about during Deceased was we loved how clever Tom Taylor was, and we were going to try to see what was going to be the one little twist that, or one little clever thing that he would have used. Now, yes, we all know about Deathstroke and his healing factor, but a question that would have been here, I mean, we've seen not even Barry with the Speed Force with the, you know, the crazy metabolism or anything like that. Like,
yeah, that's something I had a question for you. Like, how is it that Deathstroke, because that's the big reveal here in the very beginning, is that Deathstroke does look at his phone for his contract. He does get the anti-life equation. And then in the next page, he immediately, like, not immediately, but he gets out of it. And you notice how, like, he's ripped up his face. He's in a completely different city now, so who knows, like, how far he is from where he was, you know, kind of thing. And he's, like, back to normal. So
yeah, I figured if there was a character to kind of do something like that, I mean, he would be the person to do it. So I don't know. I kind of thought it was clever, but in the same way, I can also be like,
why didn't Superman?
Like, why didn't one of them, like, they could have done it? So I felt like this was more of a convenient thing for the storyteller.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I was okay with it because I think with it being an Elseworld and zombie kind of thing, I don't know. I just kind of find it all being ridiculous. So I'm okay. I guess it's just being more, like, lenient. But I don't know. I thought it was clever. Seeing the story with Jason, that was interesting because I wanted to see when you saw him coming into the Batcave and he kind of sees, you know, I mean, you're seeing Dick there, you're seeing Bruce there, you're seeing Tim. I mean, he's literally seeing the Bat family. They're dead. I was kind of curious to see what was going to be the reaction. And seeing him, I mean, it was nice to see that he buried him. It was funny to see kind of like what he wrote.
Bruce Wayne, see him. Father, mentor, bastard, Batman.
Yeah, so I like that. You know, the stuff with Rose, okay, like, I like to see, you know, Well, one thing, I didn't even know that Rose can see in the future.
I did not know that either.
So, I mean, that was something that was clever. I mean, there's so many things I know about Rose, but I don't know why. They never, maybe because every time they just show Rose, it's always about, you know, her trying to either escape from her dad's footsteps or embrace it and be the new, you know, it seems like her stories are always the same. So I did not know that. So I thought that was pretty cool and it was clever. Now, seeing what happened with Deathstroke when he was there to try to get Rose, I was like, okay, that's pretty rad. You know, besides that kind of stuff, I mean, the Mirror Master thing was pretty trippy.
Yeah, that was interesting. That visually was it was very cool.
Yeah. And then that's kind of like when things got a little interesting with like the Vandal Savage. And to me, I don't know, that little moment there is kind of like where I was like, all right, this is boring. Because I guess I just didn't care too much about the little inner dealings. But then this is when things got nuts with Jim Gordon. I mean, with what happened with him, like him trying to escape with Harvey, and you saw what happened to Harvey, which was, you know, was pretty rough to see. And then
I really like that spoiler Batgirl is there.
Oh, yeah, that was great. Yes.
But one thing that I wanted to bring up, just because we kind of skimmed over it when Jason was in the Batcave, we see Ace, and you notice that Alfred just left Ace.
Well, I mean, I figured I was skipping that one on purpose because I had a feeling that you and me, I didn't know that you wrote something on Twitter after you read it, uh-huh. And I think we had the same kind of feeling, like that Ace was going to be one of those that kind of bites the dust.
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of like why I left Ace to the end, because I was
okay. We'll
ask
talk. We'll talk about it later. We'll talk about it at the very end. We'll talk about it at the very end.
Yeah. So with this being said, with Jason Todd actually picking up Jim Gordon, now he's in the Batcave, and you know there's a lot of information. It was kind of funny seeing Jim Gordon the way he figured out. He's like, Jason Todd, Cassandra Cain, Bruce Wayne, Dick Grayson. He's like, of course, all of them are, because he wants to know the whereabouts of Barbara. And unfortunately, that was pretty sad, like seeing him coming face to face and actually seeing what happened to their, you know, what happened to Barbara. I mean, that was pretty, and it just so happened, you know, of course, that was where we saw what Harley ended up doing to Joker. So I don't know. I thought that was an interesting moment, an interesting story.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked it. I mean, it's bombastic. It's nuts. But I do have to say, I am with you in regards to with what happened with Ace being left there. And then you're kind of seeing this next tease where it says, never work with children or animals. I don't know why, but I just had that feeling that Ace was going to go. And I don't know why. It's like one of those things that I don't know. I don't know if it's like, because my mother-in-law, just after like, I don't know, 14 or 15 years, she just put her dog down. So I don't know if it's one of those things that, you know, I've known this dog for 15 years and like putting it down, and in my mind, I'm thinking to myself, geez, you know, I have two dogs that are 14 years old as well. And I'm like, man, they're getting close. And I'm like, oh man, I don't know. It's something about dogs. I never want to see dogs go through something brutal.
Yeah, dude, I immediately thought of I Am Legend. You know?
I didn't see it.
You've never seen I Am Legend?
I'm not that big of a Will Smith fan.
Oh my gosh.
I think Will Smith, I mean, back in the day, like 90s and like the Bad Boys. Okay, but I feel like you see one Will Smith movie, you see them all. You've seen them all.
Now, I will say...
I love, like, The Pursuit of Happiness. Love it. I mean, I thought that, like, that role that he did, I dug it. Like, when he did the Concussion movie, okay. But I'm okay, like, if I don't see a Will Smith movie.
Well, in I Am Legend, the really big thing, the big reveal is that his only companion, really, is a dog. And eventually, that dog gets attacked by zombie dogs and gets infected. Spoilers for, you know, the movie that's like 14 years old already. But it gets infected, and he has to put it down. Like, he is like, holding it in his arms, and he's singing Everything Will Be All Right by, of course, Bob Marley. And he's just singing and holding her, and all of a sudden she starts to turn, and he basically just, like, suffocates her to like, let her down. And it's super heartbreaking.
Dang.
Yeah, but that's why I also put the GIF towards, who was it that I sent it to? I sent it to Tom.
Taylor and Abernathy.
Yeah, Abernathy is the one that, like, did the, like, emoji for the devil and the smile. And mm-hmm. I said, no! No! And there's the gift from that moment. It's, like, right before she actually, the dog actually gets attacked in that movie. So, I didn't want to, like, completely, like, leave it out there for people to like, be like, oh, this is going to happen. So, I kind of just teased it like that.
Man, if you're going to use a dog, man, at least do, like, Marley and Me. Come on. Oh, no. I Am Legend.
Dude, I am telling you, like, when people think about killing a dog, it's either Old Yeller or I Am Legend.
Have you seen Me and Marley?
No.
Marley and Me?
Because I refuse to cry at another dog movie.
It's sad. That movie is freaking sad. And you know what's crazy? This is like one of those cool moments. I was actually at the Florida Marlins game when Jennifer Aniston and Owen Wilson had the dog.
Oh, really?
And they were filming a scene. And I was actually there with my wife. I think she was my fiance at the time. I don't remember. And I was like, what the heck are they doing here? And then they were talking about that they were there for filming a movie, but no one ever knew what it was because it was like Bark at the Park night. And it just so happened that later on, you're watching the movie, and then I see the moment that they're at that time, the Dolphin Stadium is always changing. So let's just say Pro Player Stadium. And yeah, it just so happened that I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. Like, I was there.
Wow.
But I didn't sit in those, you know, crappy seats, though. I mean, this is a baseball game. I'm freaking behind home plate.
That's awesome. But
it's also, you know, Marlin games, you know, nobody goes. So you could buy the $5 nosebleeds and then the third inning sit wherever you want.
That's awesome.
That's a perk. I've done that. I did that for like 10 years.
That is awesome. But with that, guys, I think, man, this is another long episode, but that is it. Remember, guys.
We at least talked like 6 or 7 books, though.
So yeah, yeah. It was a meaty episode.
Yeah.
But, of course, we are a part of the Nerdy Legion podcast network, so please go check them out. They have a plethora of shows all around there. And, of course, remember that we are going to be streaming on Twitch live on February 26th.
Living. That's great.
We're
so in tune with all the game, the lingo.
I know.
Hey guys, we're living. We're living live.
But I'm so glad that Twitch has actually made a category for podcasts, so we can actually have like a community there. So it's gonna be fun. Of course, you can find me at Fanboy Clay on Twitter. Mark, where can they find you?
You can find me at Mark Reads Comics, or you can reach out under the Comic Book Legion, the CB_Legion, and it could be either one of us. Another way to chat with me is on Twitch, where I'll just troll Clay because I'm just gonna find ways to change my username.
Oh yeah, so yeah, that's another thing. I've been teasing that we're going to be streaming on Twitch, but the actual handle, if you go to twitch.tv / FanboyClay10, so FanboyClay10 is where we will be streaming the podcast.
So go ahead and do that and, you know, figure out how to use Twitch. I had to learn on the fly just because I really wanted to bother him. but yeah, it's going to be fun. It sucks that I have to do my hair now or wear like a hat. But
I mean, you can't see it now because my camera is wigging out for some reason, but you know how crazy my hair is all the time. It's fine. It's fine.
That's true. No, I figured that with the recording and me not being able to see you, I thought you were still tinkering, but it's all good. It is what it is. But with that being said, we'll talk to you guys next week.
All right. See you guys later.
See you.